UAB Medcast is an ongoing medical education podcast. The UAB Division of Continuing Education designates that each episode of this enduring material is worth a maximum of 0.25 AMA PRA Category 1 credit. To collect credit, please visit uabmedicine.org/medcast and complete the episode's post-test.
Welcome to UAB Medcast, a continuing education podcast for medical professionals. Bringing knowledge to your world, here's Melanie Cole.
Extracorporeal membrane oxygenation, ECMO, has remarkably progressed over the recent years, and it has become an invaluable tool in the care of adults and children with severe cardiac and pulmonary dysfunction refractory to conventional management. My guest today is Dr. Nirmal Sharma. He's a specialist in pulmonary, allergy, and critical care medicine at UAB Medicine. Welcome to the show, Dr. Sharma. Tell us about the evolution of ECMO.
Thank you, Melanie. So ECMO is not a technology in isolation. It stems from the cardiopulmonary bypass system that were used in the operating room in the 1950s. And the first use of ECMO in humans was 1971. At that point, some early trials were done to compare ECMO with other modalities of cardiopulmonary support. Those trials, unfortunately, did not show any great survival benefit with the ECMO arm. However, it did show that the rates of complications were highly increased in the ECMO arm as compared to the non-ECMO arm. So the use of ECMO was mostly restricted to critically ill pediatric and neonatal cases. Its use in adult was very, very less and was mostly used as a salvage technique in patients. In the 1990s, again, some trials were performed on ECMO, comparing it to other modalities of treatment, and results were similar. There were increased complications noted again, with no survival benefit. So it was not until the mid-2000s that ECMO really became mainstream. In 2007-08, the CESAR trial was published out of the United Kingdom. It showed that patients with acute respiratory failure, if they were sent to centers who had ECMO experience, as compared to centers who did not, they tended to do better. There was marked survival advantage of sending patients with respiratory failure to ECMO centers. And in 2009, during the H1N1 flu pandemic, ECMO was used to support several young patients who were otherwise healthy and who would not have made it through without ECMO. And it was only after that that the utilization of ECMO became mainstream, and it really increased dramatically. In fact, several publications have shown that in the last decade or so, the utilization of ECMO for all causes has increased more than 400%. I think this main increase in utilization is due to improved technology, better training of physicians and other staff members in the management of patients on ECMO, and, of course, better understanding of the anticoagulation practices that are needed to support the ECMO circuit.
So how does it compare to conventional mechanical ventilatory support for ARDS, for example?
So, you know, if you see head-to-head, unfortunately, there are no great trials available to compare ECMO or mechanical ventilation head-to-head. You go back in the 1970s, in 1979, a randomized trial by Zappal was published, and it basically showed that mechanical ventilation and ECMO were equivalent in terms of mortality, but folks who were on ECMO had higher incidence of complications. But, you know, the fact is that when we look back 40 years, we really did not use ECMO the way it was supposed to be, utilized. What ECMO is supposed to provide is an avenue where you can reduce the intensity of mechanical ventilation or completely get rid of it. Because as you know, mechanical ventilation can in fact lead to ventilator-induced lung injury, especially if you're on very high settings. So later on, we had a trial in 2000. This is the most recent trial in 2008, which was published. It was called the CESAR trial. It tried to compare, although they did not compare mechanical ventilation to ECMO heads-on, but they found that if you transfer a patient to a center with expertise in ECMO, those patients seem to have done better than patients who were just left on mechanical ventilation at centers that did not perform ECMO. But in our experience, we've been able to reduce or completely take off mechanical ventilation as soon as we cannulate and place a patient on ECMO support. So that has been, it provides lung rest and it reduces the incidence of ventilator-induced lung injury and thereby helping the lung to recover, some or complete function.
As clinical indications are divided into the three categories according to the supported organ, cardiac, respiratory, or combination of the two, tell us about the indications for ECMO for cardiac support.
So for cardiac support, it's called VA ECMO, veno arterial ECMO. There's several indications. Myocardial infarction, associated cardiogenic shock, that's a primary indication. We get quite a few of those where despite our best efforts to maintain circulation through medications and sometimes balloon pump, assist device like balloon pump, we're not able to provide the circulatory support. So we put these patients on via ECMO and try to support them. Other indications are fulminant myocarditis, sometimes severe sepsis-associated myocardial depression. Sometimes, patients have cardiopulmonary arrest, and it has been utilized in cardiopulmonary resuscitation. Post-cardiotomy or post-heart transplant cardiogenic shock is also a recent indication. Primary graft failure, especially after heart transplant, and also sometimes the bridge to ventricular assist device implantation or heart transplantation. These are, some of the major reasons that we use ECMO for cardiac support.
And what about contraindications for cardiac support?
So contraindications, it's our relative. If you have uncontrolled active hemorrhage, then of course you have to choose, since for optimal function of the ECMO circuitry, we need systemic anticoagulation. So I would say that if you have uncontrolled active hemorrhage, we generally don't prefer to put those patients on. If the patients have some kind of terminal illness, which limits their life expectancy, more than 6 months or a year, despite, all efforts, then I would say we prefer not to utilize ECMO on them. And if they have irreversible end-stage heart disease and they're not a candidate for either a transplant or destination therapy with ventricular assist devices, then that's an absolute contraindication. And sometimes, there is other relative contraindications, like patients who are advanced aged, who are morbidly obese, who have some degree of, I would say, multi-organ failure. They are the patients who are also very carefully looked into and are not preferred to be placed on veno arterial support.
And what about ECMO indications and contraindications for respiratory support?
For respiratory support, the primary indication that we use it for is acute respiratory distress syndrome, or ARDS, due to any cause. So with patients who've had ARDS secondary to pneumonia, secondary to pancreatitis, secondary to traumatic, it could be a traumatic ARDS. Patients have had aspiration after surgery and have developed ARDS. We've also used ECMO for respiratory support in patients with end-stage lung disease who are being bridged to lung transplantation if they have a sudden decline in their function and cannot be supported with mechanical ventilation or require very intense mechanical ventilation and sedation, then we bridge them using ECMO. And also we've used ECMO for primary graft failure after lung transplantation or sometimes even acute rejection episodes, severe acute rejection episodes after lung transplantation. These are a few indications for respiratory failure. But off late, there has been a new indication primarily for patients who've had COPD or chronic obstructive pulmonary disease or asthmatic exacerbations. In these patients, specifically elevated carbon dioxide levels are the main problem. And the ECMO circuit is very, very efficient in removing the carbon dioxide, even at very, very low flow rates. So that's an upcoming indication for respiratory support on ECMO.
And what about some of the patient selection criteria? What goes into that?
So again, you know, the most important thing in our experience has been the benefit of ECMO is when the patient is able to participate in this care, can ambulate. So our center is very, very big on ambulation on ECMO, and we have seen that patients who can ambulate, their chances of recovery are much higher than patients who cannot. So we look at several factors. One of them is if there is multi-organ dysfunction, then we generally prefer not to support them with ECMO because in our experience, those PA patients tend not to do well. Now, if they have, again, if they have some bleeding of unclear etiology, something which is which can potentially prevent us from using anticoagulation, that becomes a relative contraindication. Although we have done several ECMO runs without the utilization of systemic anticoagulation, but we prefer that they don't have a bleeding risk. Now, sometimes if they have malignancy or if they have immunosuppression because of some other reason, like poor nutrition, we generally tend to avoid those cases. Morbid obesity, I would say, is a relative contraindication. We've had a fair amount of success with obese patients. We've had several cases where we have supported these individuals. Ideally, we prefer that they're non-morbidly obese, but we make case-by-case decisions on those. And also, if patients have been mechanically ventilated with very high oxygen and high PEEP for more than 7 days, then we look into several factors. We very carefully look in those cases and then decide whether they are appropriate for ECMO support.
And Dr. Sharma, in just the last few minutes, wrap it up for us. What you want other physicians to know about the use of ECMO management strategies, what do you want to tell them?
Well, I think the most important thing I want to tell them is that if you do have patients with cardiac or respiratory failure that you're not able to support with conventional methodologies, with conventional strategies, then we suggest that you contact us earlier. We contact us sooner than later. We've seen that patients who arrive to our center within the first 3 or 4 days of mechanical ventilation or other forms of cardiac support, they tend to do a little bit better than those patients who come late in the phase of the disease. That's one. So we are available. We're just a phone call away. And the number they can call is 1-800-UAB-MIST. And you can ask for the advanced lung disease physician on call. There are four of us, and we'll be happy to take your call and get the patient transferred to our center as soon as possible.
And tell us about your team. Why is UAB so great to work with?
So, Melanie, I think there are several factors to it. I think UAB as such is great in terms of medical care. As far as ECMO is concerned, I think our audience should know that UAB is one of the few centers in the country with a very large ECMO volume, and that has given us a lot of experience in management of patients on ECMO. We are able to do several cases on ECMO, which are traditionally not done in other centers. Also, the great thing about UAB is that we have a very, very cohesive, multidisciplinary team of experts ranging from medical physicians, surgeons, physical therapists, respiratory therapists, and specialized ECMO nurses who can provide holistic care to the patient. Additionally, we're one of the few programs in the country that provide ambulatory ECMO. That means we're able to provide physical therapy to some select group of patients on ECMO support or waiting for recovery of their lungs or heart or, you know, if they're being bridged to organ transplantation. And we have also the ability to cannulate patients at other sites. That means if we have a referral from another hospital in or around Alabama, we have the infrastructure to fly in there, cannulate the patients, and bring them back through our critical care transport system on ECMO support. So I think these factors make us place us in a very, very unique spot nationally and especially in the Southeast region.
Thank you so much for being with us today. You're listening to UAB Medcast. For more information on resources available at UAB Medicine, you can go to uabmedicine.org/physician. That's uabmedicine.org/physician. This is Melanie Cole. Thanks so much for listening.